okay and legal to bomb people on a daily basis all over the world, to starve people. And then when some airplanes fly into some towers, a guy gets off his medicine and starts shooting up the mall or something, then the world comes to an end.
Garvey's movement was a serious challenge to imperialism, because if Africans begin to work for our own interests, then we ain't working for theirs.
In the final analysis, white feminism just becomes, I don't know, a leftist feminist tool of colonial domination. Mm.
So this discussion has to happen.
This is Africa Live.
Raising up the question of African women in a way that contributes to our liberation and unification.
ABDEP sees our nursing school as an extension of what Marcus Garvey established in the early 1920s with the Black Cross nurses. Our nurses are being trained to not only again be nurses, but to be African internationals.
I sympathize with these people so much that I hope that as a consequence of what has happened to them, they will be able to look at the rest of the world as humans as well. They will be able to assume that the next victim of a drone attack in Afghanistan may also have parents, may also have community people who will suffer and cry for them as well.
Uhuru. Welcome to Africa Live on the Uhuru Radio Network. I'm Dedan Sankara. Africa Live is a weekly show that brings you the best in news and analysis from the African internationalist perspective. We'll be right back to kick off Africa Live. Welcome back to Africa Live. I'm Dedan Sankara. This segment is entitled This Moment in History. Our guest is Omali Yeshitela, Chairman of the African Socialist International and the African People's Socialist Party. Uhuru Chairman, welcome to Africa Live.
Uhuru, thank you very much for having me.
It's been a while since you've been with us, so thank you for joining us today.
Glad to be here, comrade.
The African People's Socialist Party has designated February 21st as the Day of the African Martyr. Chairman, can you tell us what this day is about and why is it important?
February 21st, of course, was chosen because it's the anniversary of the assassination of Malcolm X. It was determined by the party. In fact, at our first Congress held in 1981, that issue of martyrs is one that's extremely important to us, because the U.S. government and other imperialist powers have always attempted to use prison and death as something that would terrorize African people, oppressed people, to keep us from being able to struggle for our freedom. And part of what the task has always been is to take away the weapon of the fear of death from the oppressor, and to help our people, African people, understand, of course, that the ability of the U.S. government to murder people, to murder us, is not something that should prevent us from struggling, but should be seen as evidence of greater evidence of the need to struggle. And also to help people understand that people like Malcolm X could not be prevented from struggling because of a fear of death. But in fact, were people who had determined that there are things that are worse than death. Slavery is worse than death. Colonialism is worse than death. And willingly living with that as slaves and colonial subjects is akin to being dead anyway. So the idea of the African martyr was to extol these giants from our history, from our struggle, and to have them recognized as people to be emulated and not people whose death can be allowed to intimidate us and frighten people away from struggle.
Chairman, as you said, Malcolm X was assassinated on February 21st, 1965, in the Audubon Ballroom in New York City. Describe what was happening in the world at that moment and what was the impact of his death.
I think that's really important. Well, I think it must be understood the role that Malcolm X played in the struggle. It was a critical role. It was at a moment when the African liberation movement in this country was suffering from a kind of uncertainty, we're suffering from its limitations being attached to attempts to reform America. It was called a civil rights movement as opposed to a movement to win our freedom. To have civil rights is to fight for rights within the existing social order. And Malcolm X was one who challenged that in a very serious way ideologically. Malcolm X was the single force that stood as a transition from a civil rights movement, a movement based on moral persuasion and revolution and revolutionary struggle. And he became the ideological guide for anybody who from all over the world who was looking to move beyond accommodation, to move beyond getting along with the oppressor. And when Malcolm X was assassinated, by the time he was assassinated, the struggle was in a process of transformation. We had young people, particularly from the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, but there were other people, you know, like from the Revolutionary Action Movement, RAM, and others who were looking around the world and seeing that other oppressed peoples around the world had moved beyond just talking about civil rights and were struggling for their freedom, for their independence from colonialism. And by the time Malcolm X was killed, he was already having a really serious impact on the struggles of Africans in this country. And in fact, he was killed too late as far as the intent of the imperialists, which was to make sure that his ideological influence did not grow, to make sure, obviously, that he was not able to organize a revolutionary movement that would go beyond what the civil rights movement was doing. And so they assassinated Malcolm X in 1965, but by 1966, you can see the impact of Malcolm X in such things as the rise of the Black Power movement, the rise of the Black Panther Party, both the Black Panther Party in Lowndes County, Alabama, that occurred in 1965, that SNCC organized, and that was a really decisive step by the civil rights movement. Where activists had declared that they were going to create an all-black political party in Alabama that would fight for electoral power, and beyond that they were not going to participate in some kind of nonviolent confrontation that would allow the oppressors and white people to beat, kill, maim, bomb us without any kind of response. And then, of course, the Black Panther Party for self-defense that came about, where young urban-based activists in California took the symbol of the Black Panther Party, actually named the Lowndes County Freedom Organization, but called the Black Panther Party because the Black Panther was a symbol. These Africans took the symbol and also took Malcolm's message, calling for Africans to stop being willing targets for white people and to use what was recognized in the United States as a constitutional right to own a shotgun, that every African should own a shotgun. And, of course, the Black Panther Party, which arose at the same time, struggles in Vietnam and Cuba, et cetera, were also expressing themselves and impacting on the consciousness of oppressed people and Africans in this country. The Black Panther Party took the advice and created a self-defense organization, adopted the beret that was made notorious by Che Guevara, and picked up a shotgun that Malcolm X indicated African people should be armed with in order to protect ourselves from reactionary anti-African, anti-black predators in the United States. And so it was just a really powerful impact that he had. And it represented a real movement away from a civil rights movement that was attempting to find a place within the American scheme of things and to forge our own way as a free and independent people. And, of course, the assassination of Malcolm X was an attempt to keep that from happening.
But, you know, we have to remind people that the United States is just one place in the world, and African people are just one of the various oppressed peoples in the world, and that the killing of Malcolm X did not stop revolutionary action that was happening everywhere else in the world, including especially in places like Vietnam, where the courageous people were fighting against the imperialists there. And so even though Malcolm was killed, and it had a serious impact on the struggle in this country, but one of the things it did was it really escalated an understanding by Africans in this country that nonviolent approach, philosophical nonviolence, was not something that would work, and that Malcolm X was absolutely correct, as made obvious by his assassination, that African people were going to have to fight to win our freedom. He did not succeed in pulling together the organization that he was trying to build, but we've seen organizations that have come about subsequent to his assassination that were representative of his ideas. And of course, the Black Panther Party was one. JOMO, the Hunter Militant Organization, that was one of the precursors to the African People's Socialist Party, was one. JOMO, which was in many ways similar to the Black Panther Party, but based in the South. So they killed Malcolm, but obviously his ideas continue to live and impact on the consciousness even today of African people, not only people of my generation, but also young Africans who are currently stepping forward or attempting to step forward, coming into consciousness, see Malcolm X as a great symbol of resistance and struggle against U.S. colonialism.
Chairman, let's turn our attention to the assassination of Huey P. Newton. In 1990, the Burning Spear Publications published the last speeches of Huey P. Newton. The book featured two speeches by Huey that took place at the Uhuru House in Oakland, California. Huey was clear about his relationship to the African People's Socialist Party when he says, "You might not have the Black Panther Party, but you have the Uhuru House. You might not have the Black Panther newspaper, but you have the Burning Spear. So they really haven't done anything by crushing one organization." The book also features two speeches by you where you talk about how, in spite of Huey being targeted by the U.S. government, it was a common occurrence in the pages of the Burning Spear newspaper to call him out. One quote that's there says, "Huey, you can't retire. They ain't gonna let you retire. You better come on down here and do some work." In that same speech, you point out that Huey was on the cutting edge of the struggle, and that is why he was embraced by the people, and that in order to stop being targeted, all Huey had to do was repudiate the revolution, and that he would have never had another problem. He never did. What are your thoughts about Huey and your memories of him?
Well, Huey P. Newton was an extraordinarily courageous man. He was extremely inquisitive intellectually. He was brilliant in many ways and had a very serious impact on the struggle of our people, not only here in the United States, but around the world and the oppressed people around the world. I remember being with you, much of what is not understood, I think, about the death of Huey P. Newton is that it began before the actual assassination, the bullet that was put into his head, that Huey fell victim to a serious illness, and that resulted in him being hospitalized. And he was taken to the hospital, I think it was Kaiser, in Oakland, and they opened him. They went into him, opened him, and closed him up, and then sent him out of Kaiser to another hospital in Oakland. I can't think of the name of it at the time, but it was one that mostly working class and poor Africans went to, and where it was determined that Huey had suffered some kind of intestinal blockage. He was in the hospital for a while, and I was visiting him on a regular basis while he was there in the hospital. And I am convinced that what happened was that they had done something to Newton, and that when they went into him, when they at Kaiser Hospital, the Kaiser Hospital became, I don't know if upset is the right word to use, but they did not want to become accomplices in whatever was being done to Huey, and so they sent him away to another hospital. And I think that's a part of what we have to look at. And we have to look at the many times in the preceding months when Newton had been, the police had once come to his house and raided his house and found an inoperable gun there and arrested him for being a felon in possession of a weapon. He was bonded out on that. And then on another night, they found Newton's car one place, and then Newton several blocks away someplace. And they said in the car was a weapon, so they arrested him for possession of a weapon then. And I'm convinced that all of this was a prelude to his assassination to make sure that Newton would not be armed, to make sure that he was defenseless. Because that's the way they operate most effectively. That's how they killed Fred Hampton in 1969 when they put drugs in his Kool-Aid so that he was asleep and could not awaken and defend himself when they murdered him there. And they remember the last time that they had confronted Newton and Newton was armed. The outcome was not something that they wanted, and to make sure that he was not able to defend himself, I'm sure that the government had done all these things to make him gun shy and to make him to let him know that they would arrest him when they found him with the weapon. And so when Huey was assassinated, of course, he did not have a weapon. He was unarmed. Newton was assassinated, and I learned of it because Comrade in the Party was a nurse and he worked at Highland. That's the hospital where Newton had gone, where they had sent him for the operation when they sent him from Kaiser, and that's also the hospital they took him to when he was shot. And this comrade called me on the phone and said that that Newton had been shot in the head, that he was dead, that he wouldn't make it. And so we knew early on that it happened. We called meetings and made a decision on the spot that the party would define Huey P. Newton in the public consciousness. We would not allow that the imperialists to be able to do that. And so by the next morning, newspaper headlines were reading things like from emperor to bum, defining Newton and just other kinds of assaults on his memory, et cetera. And we initiated a campaign. But I should tell you that when Newton was killed, every cop in the African community in Oakland was removed. There was not a single cop. You couldn't find a cop in the African community. And we led massive demonstrations through the streets of Oakland, with the slogan, the chant, "Who killed Huey? Don't tell no lie. The government, the FBI." We held at the place where he was gunned down. We held nightly rallies showing films of the Black Panther Party and the comrade Biko Lumumba, one of our most important leaders, making speeches, reminding people of who Huey was and what he meant to the struggle of our people. We did a stencil of almost life-size silhouette of Newton, the iconic silhouette of Newton standing, holding a shotgun, and we put it everywhere on sidewalks, on posts, on buildings, everywhere you went throughout Oakland, you would see this. So that they wanted to characterize Oakland in one way, Huey in one way, and we were determined to do it another way. And at his funeral, that was packed by all kinds of folks. We had another funeral on the outside, And when the funeral ended, it was the African People Socialist Party that led this incredible march with the hearse carrying his body through the streets of Oakland. We are the ones who actually created an honor guard and did the security when at the funeral home where his body was kept for viewing. We are the ones who did the program for his funeral. We printed the program. We had a printing press and a printing operation. We printed the program. We designed and printed the program. We are the ones who actually got the undertaker who carried out the process of the funeral and everything for Huey C. Newton. So we played a major role in that process, and this was determined not to allow the U.S. government and the ruling class media to define who Huey C. Newton was. And so, I mean, that's how we, that's the role that the party played in this process. And in addition to that, the woman he was married to, Frederica, we had already established a relationship with her, especially during the time when Huey was in the hospital. We put up cans throughout the African community in shops and stores, collecting money for her. We made donations of our own to her. We collected resources to make sure that she was going to be all right. And so we, that's the role that, that the party played in how we understood Huey and how we understood what had happened to Huey P. Newton, that it was an assassination. And the thing that also helped to really confirmed that was when Huey P. Newton was initially shot, and the police appeared at this press conference, and someone from the media asked the chief of police. They told the chief of police that some photographers said that they actually saw the police capture someone. Have you captured someone? And the chief of police said, no, we have not captured anyone. And then the guy said, well, if you had captured someone, would you say it? And he said, yes, we'd say it if we'd captured someone. And then, of course, what we'll find out later on is that they had somebody in custody. And we are convinced that what had happened was that they did not intend to have somebody in custody, but that somebody saw them when they arrested this person, and that trapped them with having to bring to produce somebody as the assassin of Huey P. Newton. Which is not to say that the person who they have locked up did not shoot Newton, but it is to say that if he shot Newton, that the government was complicit and an element of the Oakland Police Department was involved in that. And that should not appear far-fetched, because you've got to remember that the Black Panther Party of the United States in this country had been perceived as the greatest threat to the internal security of this government by the head of the FBI, which is the secret internal police in this country, and that Oakland worked really closely with all kinds of intelligence agencies for the purpose of crushing the Black Panther Party. So it is absolutely reasonable that they would have had something to do with what happened to Huey P. Newton, and they did have something to do with it.
Chairman, 3 days after the murder of Huey on the streets of Oakland, you made a speech at the memorial. On August 25th, 1989, you said, you and I are to believe that somehow black youth and the projects are bringing drugs into this country. You and I are to believe that you are fighting a war against drugs when you tell the police to go kill kids in the project. They tell us that the drug trade may be worth $300 billion a year, and that you and I are supposed to believe that $300 billion a year is coming into the projects in the black community of this country. It's insanity. They killed the people who protect the projects, disarmed them, disorganized them, because that's who Huey P. Newton organized. He organized those young brothers and sisters right out there. When you talk about drugs in our community, you're not talking about a drug problem. You're talking about a drug economy that's been imposed on the community. The same white ruling class that won't let black people work in the legal capitalist economy has created an illegal capitalist economy in our communities. The truth of the matter is, brothers and sisters, if there was no drug money in the community, there wouldn't be any money in the community. Chairman, can you talk about why it's important to recognize Huey P. Newton outside of the extent that the imperialist media...
Well, I think the thing that we have to really remember is that the reason that the ruling class media were talking about Huey P. Newton is not because he was a drug addict or not because he was a thug. The fact is that there are drug addicts and thugs throughout the African community in this country and around the world that don't get any mention at all. The reason they were talking about Huey P. Newton is because he was a revolutionary. And even if he were not a revolutionary at the moment he was killed, that Huey P. Newton, as the revolutionary, had to be destroyed in the minds of African people. They were not trying to destroy the image and the memory of a drug addict or a thug. They were trying to destroy the image and the memory of someone who had the audacity to challenge imperialism, in some ways even on its own terms, and to try to build a revolutionary organization that had the audacity during the height of the Vietnamese War to write to the Vietnamese and said that the Black Panther Party would send comrades who would fight side by side in Vietnam with the Vietnamese people. That's the Huey P. Newton that the media had to destroy. Not somebody who was a drug addict, who was robbing drug dealers. They had to destroy the Huey P. Newton who stood up to the Oakland police and showed African people that with arms, just as they have arms, then our chances are as good as theirs. And guess what? Sometimes our chances are better than theirs because they have nothing to fight for and we have everything to fight for. That's the Huey P. Newton that they had to destroy. And I think that's really important for us to understand and to remember because, Huey had contradictions. Most of us have contradictions. But the fact is that we don't love and remember Huey P. Newton because he had contradictions. We remember and love Huey P. Newton because he stood up to imperialism at a time that was extraordinarily important to Africans and oppressed people around the world. The other thing that's extremely important for us is to remember that how insidious our oppressor is, that there's nothing that the oppressor will not do. There's no lie that the oppressor will not tell. There's no brutality that the oppressor will not commit. So everything that the oppressor says is something that we have to hold extremely suspicious, dubious, and there's very little that the oppressor says that we should believe. There's no morality, there's no anything of value to us that the oppressor has to say. It is a liar. The imperialists are always wrong. They always lie. They use any method to keep the people oppressed. They will destroy anybody who represents a resistance and struggle that might be emulated by oppressed people. And they will create a certain kind of bourgeois cynicism in our communities that will justify the murder of our leaders by making the leaders responsible for what happens to themselves. And by they will do the same thing to our communities. They make us responsible for our own oppression. This is typical of how the imperialists operate, how they work. And so anytime we see that kind of nonsense, I think we have to treat it for what it is. It is absolute nonsense, and it's respect for the ruling class. And Huey P. Newton was very on top of it when he said that, there are no laws. There's nothing that the bourgeoisie, that the imperialists say that the oppressed should respect. And that is absolutely true. The oppressor does not have the ability to tell the truth. It doesn't have the capacity to tell the truth.
In that quote that I read earlier from 1989, is the foreshadowing of the war on drugs that has ravaged and decimated the African community for the last 25 years. What did you see at that moment that gave you the clarity of things yet to come?
Well, part of what we know is something about colonialism, and that's really important. To know that the conditions that we suffer as a people is based on the fact that our communities are under siege, that there is a foreign, hostile, alien entity. The United States government immediately in this country, and it looks differently in various other places around the world, but African people everywhere are under colonial domination. And I think that's the first thing that we have to understand. Secondly, the other thing that we have to understand is that every instance of anti-colonial resistance has been led by working and toiling masses of the people. And the primary victims of what was happening to us were the working class, the people who would have been in the streets, the Fred Hamptons of this country and of the world, the people who were in the housing projects, who were the ones who were carrying out the free breakfast programs, the people who were coming out of the prisons, or organized and ready to resist. The people who even went into the U.S. military and once there found themselves in places like Vietnam and made created insurance policies that would send the money upon their death to the Black Panther Party. These are the forces who were targeted by that. And the African People's Socialist Party, being an anti-colonial organization that is works in the interests of the African working class, found ourselves in this position of having to defend the African working class, not only to advance the struggle against colonialism, but to see that this most primary, the most fundamental component of our community necessary to make this struggle was under siege. And one, the highest and sharpest expression of this attack was on the African working class. So the drug thing that came into our community, everybody understood it. I mean, people in the community were saying that Africans, black people don't have boats and airplanes to bring this stuff in. It's coming from someplace. It wasn't even complicated. You know, people living in housing projects understood that it was coming from someplace else. And so the other thing is that we know a little bit about history and how colonialism has functioned over the centuries, and what it is capable of doing and what it has done, even with drugs, and how it turned China into a whole nation of junkies using drugs, Vietnam, drugs. And so we have that kind of background and understanding of what the imperialists have done, what the imperialists are capable of doing, and that we live in a foreign domination and the primary target to make sure that we did not rise up and fight for our freedom was the African working class, and that was the force that was targeted for this this huge chemical warfare that came in the form of a drug economy that was imposed on our community.
Today in Africa Live, we've only spoken about two African martyrs, Malcolm X and Huey P. Newton. There are many more that are known and more that are unknown. The Day of the African Martyr reminds us that those that struggle and sacrifice their lives in the African liberation struggle must be honored.
I think that's right, and there are those who are unknown, and therefore unnamed. I mean, we know about people like Thomas Sankara. We know about people like Amilcar Cabral. We know about people like Patrice Lumumba, and probably people like Mangaliso Sobukwe, and probably people like Kwame Nkrumah. I said probably because there was not a direct, obvious kind of connection. They allegedly died from some kind of sickness that came to them, but I don't think it's a coincidence that Nkrumah would die, would first of all be overthrown 3 years after the creation of this monstrous organization of African unity that he fought so seriously to make a weapon of our revolution. And 3 years later, he's overthrown. So, I mean, and then, of course, we know about Biko Lumumba, but there are people in local communities, people like Lavelle Mixon, who killed four cops in Oakland before he was killed. There are people like Hydra Lacey in St. Petersburg, Florida, who killed two before he was killed. And the thing about forces like Lacey and Mixon is that they were not in revolutionary organizations and may not have even had any kind of political consciousness. But they lived under colonial occupation. And the police in our community functioned as an occupying army. And what happens is when people resist this occupying army, whether they're conscious of it or not, they're fighting against colonial domination, colonial occupation, and their death, I think, should be celebrated as death of a martyr. They are examples, and the bourgeoisie, the ruling class, knows this. The kinds of things they've done subsequent to killing people like this indicate that they're quite aware that they've created martyrs in our community. So there are people who have died all over this world in similar fashions, resisting. Some of them may not have been involved in political organization, but they were resisting domination. And I think that's why the issue of the martyrs is so important to us, to not allow the ruling class to define those people who they murder, who they kill, we in our communities must maintain or struggle for control of the definition of who they are and what they have meant to our community and what they mean to our struggle to be a free people.
You're listening to Africa Live on the Uhuru Radio Network. This segment is entitled This Moment in History. Our guest today, Omalle Yeshitela, chairman of the African Socialist International and the African People's Socialist Party. Chairman, let's turn our attention to Jacksonville, Florida. Days ago, Michael Dunn was convicted of 3 counts of attempted murder. Dunn, a 47-year-old white nationalist, shot and murdered Jordan Davis, a 17-year-old African child, for playing loud music on November 23, 2012. The imperialist media constantly promotes this fantasy of living in a post-racial America, but this fantasy is often broken as we see increasing levels of colonial violence against African people. What does this all mean?
I think what it means is that there is a more obvious and better defined ideological polarization that's happening in this country, where people of the oppressor nation, white people, striking out, attacking Africans, not only in this country, by the way. It's happening in various places throughout Europe. And, of course, we know what Europe and U.S. imperialism is doing around the world. So we see a sharper polarization. And there's a polarization that, and I say a sharp polarization, what I actually mean is conscious and ideologically based kind of polarization that has not been obvious to people, and not as much since the height of the civil rights movement, where white people would just come out and attack Africans who were trying to win our freedoms. And now you see this horrible resentment of African people, African young people, at a time where the whole imperialist system is in crisis. And per usual, the white people, all of the white people, or certainly the vast majority of the white people, their representatives in Congress and on juries, assume that it is the economic problems and the other aspects of uncertainty that they experience are due to black people. And the ideological assault that's been forever with us, that's the foundation, ideological foundation of capitalism, is this thing that they call racism. This notion of black people as the other, the frightening specter that has to be controlled and crushed and kept on leashes and things like that, lest we rape old white women or snatch their purses and do horrible kinds of things. This is something that lives in the imagination of most white people, which is why a jury would be able to let a white man go, say that I was scared, because most white people are scared of black people, scared of people who, you know, they recognize have been wronged so badly by the white power system, and most white people do not consider us as a part of them. So we are the others. And so there's an ideological basis for it, and that ideological basis is clearly motivating force for the growing attacks on African people, such as represented by Dunn's gunning down of Jordan Davis. So even having done that, and the kinds of statements made about young black people and our music, et cetera, I think attributed to Dunn. That is obviously enough for anybody from our community to recognize what had happened. But the white impulse is always to protect the security of the white community, and of the white community as represented by individuals. It's like in the case of George Zimmerman. People thought because there were so many women on the jury that they would feel sympathy for, as mothers, for the child who was killed. And what happened, of course, is they did feel sympathy for the child they identified with, which was the white guy, Zimmerman, who was the one who would be their son. Their son was not going to be the black person that they are all afraid of. Their son, that's why they have gated communities. That's why they have rent-a-cop. That's why they have police there all the time, because they're afraid of black people. That's why you see the specter even now in Florida, in Tampa, Florida, for example, where they have the state fair, and they're showing pictures of young Africans who are supposedly terrorizing everybody at the fair, and the police are now coming up with new rules. And that's why every mall in urban cities around this country, they have laws that says that young people can't come to the mall if they wear their pants a certain way, if they don't wear their hats right, et cetera. These are codes that are designed to try and control. And of course, what they do even is they define African people in a certain way that makes permissible the kinds of things that Gunn did, that Zimmerman did, and that white people and the government do to African people on a daily basis. So what is happening, of course, is that more and more African people, as quiet as it's kept, and it may not be that obvious, are summing this up. Young people are having to sum this up, that the system does not work for you, that anybody can kill us at any time they want to, and this community is not just going to sit and allow that to happen, especially if there are revolutionaries organizing throughout these communities and helping that community to understand that what we are experiencing is a consequence of being a colonized and subject people. And that the only way that's going to end it is for African people to ourselves become the state power so that we make the laws that define the relationship that we have with each other and that we have with other people as well.
In the United States, Washington State and Colorado have legalized marijuana. In both states, it's expected to bring in millions of dollars in revenue. Several other states have decriminalized the use of marijuana for medical and recreational purposes, as well as the possession of small amounts. While some herald this as a new day in America, the African People's Socialist Party has a different view. Chairman, what's the party's position on the legalization of marijuana?
Well, first of all, I think it's really important to understand that the United States government is not talking about decriminalizing marijuana as some beneficent thing that it's trying to do to help poor people who have been victimized by such laws. The fact is that even though they're talking about decriminalizing marijuana, there's not been a single statement about releasing all of these African people who have been filling up prisons throughout this country and cutting them loose because of this sudden epiphany that marijuana is not bad after all, according to Barack Hussein Obama. So it's not something that that's been done to help certainly African people. There are various things that's at work here. One thing that's at work is that the U.S. can use the money. When I say use the money, I don't mean that they're not getting the money already from marijuana and all the other drugs that are out there in the community. But they're not. The U.S. government is not directly getting the money. You got to see what's happening throughout this country in terms of the shortfall, the economic shortfall of states and cities throughout the United States, of you know, bankruptcies and things like that, and just the state of the economy at large. They need the money. And if you look at what's happening in Colorado, where decriminalization has occurred in a very short period of time, they've made hundreds of millions of dollars from taxing marijuana use. So part of it is an economic question. Part of it also is designed to deal, eliminate, minimize contradiction that exists right now at the time of this crisis of imperialism, contradiction that exists between white people and the colonial state. Because the need, of course, is for the state to be able to have a unified population against the colonized of the world, including the colonized inside the United States. So I think that's what's important to understand. I think it's important also to understand that just like with alcohol, which is a legal drug in the African community, you go to the African community, you see churches and alcohol dispensaries predominate in these communities. This in such a number that would not even be allowed in the white community. Just code violations. I mean, it couldn't be possible, but everywhere. And of course, this is true because absence of revolution, the oppressed people are most likely to be the ones who would use drugs as a form of medicating, dealing with the oppression and things that happen in our lives, as opposed to struggling against the state. You know, one reason that we oppose in the party to use of marijuana, one of the reasons is because marijuana, because we are materialists, and marijuana usage makes the assumption that there's something wrong with you. So you smoke marijuana to make yourself feel bad, but what makes us feel bad is the conditions of our conditions of existence as a colonized subject people. We understand that the real high to be achieved is in struggling against colonial domination. That's the real high. And that so that's why we say that people who, you know, look to marijuana as, you know, this great salvation soothsayer and what have you, idealists and people who don't understand where the source of the contradiction is. And the ruling class understands that despite the fact that they make marijuana legal, the ones who are going to be most involved in use of marijuana and other forms of drugs when they become legal, it's going to be our community, because that's where people are in the greatest amount of pain. You're talking about medicinal marijuana. That's what Africans use marijuana for anyway. It's medicine. And so our job as a revolutionary organization, of course, as an anti-colonial organization, we can't say we oppose to decriminalizing marijuana. We can't say that we oppose to getting rid of a law that sends people to prison. We can't do that. I mean, because the law, the colonial law, is means by which you know, we are oppressed, and we are opposed to the colonial laws. The struggle for democracy for colonized people is the struggle to minimize the relationship of the impact that the state has on us and our community. So while we can't do that, what we must do and can do is struggle to help our people understand that alcohol, drugs are not a reasonable and permissible response to our conditions of existence, that revolution is the only viable response. So we don't say don't do this in terms of to the state, that you must not decriminalize marijuana. What we say to our people is decriminalization of marijuana is something that they've done for white folk, something they've done for the imperialist state, and that it is up to us as African people to recognize that our responsibility is to make this a heaven on earth in the real world, as opposed to doing something, ingesting something that just impacts on our brain. So I think that the real beneficiaries of decriminalization are the state, the corporations that will be engaged in the production and distribution of marijuana, and along with lesser middle men and women who will be legally engaged in the trade. I've known people, I've heard of people who rushed right to Colorado to set up their own little businesses, entrepreneurs, where they're going to make a lot of money, you know, based on legalization of marijuana. And the corporations, who's going to be packaging and distributing this stuff? It's the same people who do Vice Wars and Marlboros and all these other. They're the ones who've got the apparatus to do that, so they're going to make a lot of money, and those are going to be the key beneficiaries. So our responsibility is to win African people to a revolutionary understanding, to build a revolutionary posture inside our community to take on the kinds of conditions that would drive us in the first place to alcohol and drug use.
It is known that the U.S. government has participated in the assassination of democratically elected officials of sovereign nations. It's known as well that the U.S. is often involved in destabilizing through instigation of regime change within nations that promote a socialist agenda. Prior to the death of Hugo Chavez in 2013, and now more than ever, we see attacks against the people and the sovereignty of Venezuela that are not just from external forces, but internal enemies as well. Chairman, what can you tell us about what's going on in the streets of Venezuela?
Well, you know, if one reads these political report to the Sixth Congress of the Party, it mentions something that's happening in the world, and it talks about the shifting balance of geopolitical power that's happening in the world. And it states, quoted, the full measure of the shifting balance of geopolitical power cannot be fully understood without considering other areas of the world where the United States imperialism is experiencing a tuck-tail retreat. In South America, the advent of the government of the late Hugo Chavez of Venezuela, as well as the governments of Evo Morales of Bolivia and Daniel Ortega of Nicaragua, is representative of dwindling U.S. influence on that continent, derisively considered the U.S. backyard in the past. The death of Hugo Chavez on March of 2013 would not change that reality. Proven to have been an extremely important figure in the development of the struggle against imperialism, Chavez was representative of the sea change occurring in the world. This is something the U.S. and other imperialists are attempting to accept or to defend against. There is currently an escalation of intrigue and interference in the political situation in Venezuela and the region, with the intent to intensify political and social instability that will support and justify U.S. efforts to isolate the Venezuelan government and replace it with a puppet regime. This represents a typical imperialist misunderstanding reflecting an inability and unwillingness to see the generalized historical trend manifested in specific events. So the point that's made, you know, here in the political report is that it says that this is what the United States government is doing, will do. And, of course, you see that organizations that's being funded by the United States government in Venezuela are key to making this happen. You see media representation here making this happen. You see immediate instant responses to any kinds of articles and things that's put on the Internet about the situation in Venezuela, refuting that, supposedly coming from poor and oppressed people in Venezuela, et cetera. So it's a well-orchestrated thing that to create a certain image of the reality in Venezuela, and something that we surely anticipated with the death of Hugo Chavez. So there's nothing mysterious about it to anybody who's familiar with how the U.S. and other imperial powers work and how desperate they are with this whole shifting of balance of forces that's happening in the world that's led to the crisis they're confronted with right now. And Venezuela has been a critical component of that crisis.
On February 9th, the African People's Socialist Party held a dual and contending power conference in St. Petersburg, Florida. It's important to note as well that Africans and other oppressed people from around the world tuned in and watched this via the Internet. Chairman, what was the purpose of this conference, and what were some of the outcomes?
The critical thing is that, and we talked about this at our 6th Congress as well, and we've got two generations of people who have no experience, no reference, revolutionary references that can arm them, that can help them to understand the world. I mean, they can go back and they can see pictures that they are familiar with from the past of the Black Panthers or Malcolm X or something like that. But in terms of having a genuine reference, something they can relate to that's happening on the ground in the world for two generations, since the U.S. government succeeded in crushing our movement, killing our leaders, and destroying our organizations, there's been nothing. And so what has now substituted for some kind of political activity, political action, has been, you know, people on Facebook or when something like the case of Michael Dunn or the case of Zimmerman, when those things occur and people have, you know, these rallies, and that's it. It's all over. And so the thing that's really clear for the party, you know, we've engaged in the most serious struggle for capacity building revolutionary organizations that's based on having the long view and not just struggling around symptoms of the contradiction, but around the reality that we're confronted with, and with the intent of becoming a self-governing people, that we have to not only engage our oppressors in certain kinds of ways, but we have to actually build the capacity to be for self-rule, self-government. And we have to occupy territory, occupy political space, organizational space, ideological space. We have to capture that space on the ground in real terms, in real time, in order for any revolutionary effort to be meaningful or real, in order to turn around our situation where we're confronted with any place in the world. And so we are struck by the fact that this growing crisis that the imperialists are going through, that we see, you know, every day. Look at what's happening in the world. Thailand is on fire. Ukraine is on fire. Venezuela is on fire. Crisis in Asia. The threats against the head of state of Korea, of Democratic Republic of Korea. The U.S. using military planes to fly through the zone that has been established by China as it's part of its territory, to defy that, to egging on countries like Japan and Vietnam to engage in struggle with China. So it's a whole crisis. And then you got the situation like you're seeing happening here in this country with the case of Don and the young brother Jordan who was killed, and it's clear that the crisis is here, that struggle is deepening. The people want to resist and are going to resist, and the party has to be in place. And so we're talking about building an actual capacity for a party and setting down roots in communities every place, and doing that through organizing around programs that actually meet the needs, like, of the people. We're talking about child care collectors, where you got all these African women who are heads of households, who are trapped politically, economically, and socially because they have responsibility 24 hours a day of taking care of children. So we're talking about creating collectives where we can take that burden off women and then make it a social burden by the entire community, a social responsibility by the entire community to take care of the children in the community. And we do this not by wishful thinking, but actually creating structured kind of organizational relationships in our community. We're talking about building food growing capacities in every community where we're located. If it's someplace in East Africa, West Africa, we're talking about, and other places where there's enough land available, we're talking about growing food collectively so that as this crisis deepens, we see the economy of the imperialist economy and the U.S. dollar subject to actually collapse. So what will happen when that occurs? In addition to seeing more people like Dunn who will be taking it out on African people in the streets, the possibility of chaos in our own communities because of the competition for resources having to do with food and other things that we need. So we're saying let's collectivize this process and put on the ground actual programs for power that will grow food collectively and do other kinds of things like that. And those are two of the kinds of programs that we've talked about, but there are other things that we want to put down on the ground so that our community will have the ability to defend itself, but not just to defend itself, but to put in place a capacity to meet our own needs of food, clothing, and shelter. Those are some of the things that the whole Dual Power Conference was about, and to initiate in various places around the world where the party is located, the organizational structures and plans to implement them so that the communities will have power to resolve contradictions that we are confronted with and not be left to the whims of an imperial power who, when it feels like it will hand out pittance and charity, and every time it does it in a fashion that divides the community as opposed to unites the community, weakens the community as opposed to strengthen the community. So that's part of what the Dual Power Conference and the programs that we're trying to initiate are all about.
Uhuru, you're listening to Africa Live on the Uhuru Radio Network. This segment entitled This Moment in History features our guest, Chairman Omalla Yeshitela of the African Socialist International and the African People's Socialist Party. Chairman, as always, thank you for joining us and look forward to having you back here on Africa Live and Uhuru Radio very soon.
Uhuru, comrade, it's very good to be with you.
Information, ideas, reality. That's what the Burning Spear newspaper offers you each month. Truth about government, society, entertainment, and the world around you. The Burning Spear is the oldest Black Power newspaper in existence, and your one-year subscription is only $25. Get the insight and perspective that the mass media machine cannot and will not deliver. Read dynamic articles on the most pressing issues affecting the lives of African workers in the U.S., Africa, and around the world. Each month, you'll find real political analysis of the crisis of parasitic capitalism, insight into world and local events, and a focus on the realities and struggles in the heart of the hood, expressing the vision and voice of the African working class. Uncompromising truth, unwavering focus. The Burning Spear newspaper. This is Black Power in the 21st century. Subscribe today and don't get fooled again. Order your subscription now. Go to burningspearmarketplace.com and click on Spear. That's burningspearmarketplace.com and click on Spear. Uhuru.
The home of the free, the land of the brave, where fear and frustration dance on your grave, where martial law blows in the breeze, with basketball plays in the greatest of ease. No more health care, no more dreams, no more heroes, no more themes. College education at a minimum wage, looking at the future and then turning the page. Homeless in shelters, homeless tomorrow, one paycheck away from homeless sorrow. The global economy becomes a global slave. Who do we dispose of and who do we save? The panther is yawning, the rhythm and blues, conservative smiles on the 5 o'clock news. Here comes nude, here comes the ground, here comes the fury, here comes the sound.
No more healthcare, no more dreams, no more heroes, no more themes. No more healthcare, no more dreams, no more heroes, no more themes.
Hitmen for America with contracts to kill, right-wing fantasies on a liberal thrill. Debates the deals and media leaks, they get the talk shows and we get the freaks. Neighborhood jails for neighborhood crimes, family and friends drop neighborhood dimes. No public TV, no public opinion, total oppression of a total dominion. The real design, the ultimate plan, confusion becomes God and God becomes man. Bobby Hutton was the first to go, the panther raised and tried to grow. He licked his wounds, he buried his dead, he bowed his arrogance but never his head. Into the country, out the back door, CIA, DEA pimping this whore. Guns, badges and ID cards, corruption complete with security guards. A kilo of a vial, a pipe of gram, are closely related to Uncle Sam. We sniff your bags, you sniff our blow, playing with justice while playing the pro.
No more healthcare, no more dreams, no more heroes, no more themes. No more healthcare, no more dreams, no more heroes, no more themes.
Mama's in the crack house, daddy's at the border, dial 911 and place your order. The war on drugs, one great big joke, can you finish the paperwork while I finish the code? Record companies with thumbs up their ass, blowing smoke up yours while passing gas. Sing that song, tap your feet, there goes our music, here comes their beat. It once was real, it once was true, it once had meaning we once knew. Powerful men with so little eyes, feasting on children with illusion and lies. Control, manipulate, manipulate control. They pump up the volume and twist our soul. Bunchy Carter was a sacrifice, while Fred Hampton paid the price. They came from the heart, they came from the street, without Glock 9s or hip-hop beats. Gun battles, death and mental fatigue, who was down and who was in league. Gangster rap, gangster sham, gangster dreams of who I am. From the rural south, the industrial north, the panther came stalking, the panther came forth. Huey, Bobby, and Geronimo Pratt, a Finney and a Sada, some of all of that. Young, precocious, and very brave, they made mistakes but always gave. Irresponsible, we sold them out. Instead of support, we gave them doubt. Afraid of ourselves, afraid to be free, afraid of being what it means to be.
No more healthcare, no more dreams, no more heroes, no more themes. No more healthcare, no more dreams, no more heroes, no more themes.
Niggas, niggas desiring the American prize, trying COINTELPRO on for size, turning their backs on the rising sun, turning their backs to a loaded gun, caught in between what it means to be white, the phony left and the dangerous right. Protect yourself, protect your kind, self-defense from a selfless mind, justice for yours, justice for all. The beauty of the panther up against the wall, he wins, he loses, he fights again. His love for freedom, his only friend. Understand the panther, understand the law. The fight for justice can be brutal and raw.
gone to make us all believe the conflict died. Rescue us from evil claws. They wanted to achieve a bench to gain respect. Defend ourselves to the end. Patriots of the continent. I give all my confidence. Redemption, where them gone? Where them been? Hey, hey, where them gone? Where them gone? Where them been? Where them gone? Tribute to the martyrs.
Which part them gone? Where them been?
Quick, truly, he's the boys want to bother. Mark be a rebellion. Stand up for him rights and just start to hang him up.
What?
Cool. 1865.
So Grace Seed, what are you about George Jackson, no?
George Jackson, imprisonment, solitary confinement.
Boom, boom.
1970.
So Bomba. Yes, Grace, it's warm for Marcus. Marcus setting, sir.
One God, one name, one destiny.
Starliner,
Black.
Hey, Swamp Pico.
Pico, detain intention. Funk.
What?
1977.
South Africa.
The Black Panthers,
freedom fighters.
They tried, they died.
Luther King.
He had a dream, Grizzly. He had a dream. Believe you me.
Malcolm X.
Live struggle. Live struggle.
In a pool of blood. 1965.
But wait, nobody doing left.
It's only Rasta.
Yes, I.
I and I was not born in Chambord. I and I was born here.
You hear something, feel something, know something, do something, see something, be someone.
We're news, we're brutalized, the police in our community occupy our area, our community as a foreign troop occupies territory. Community not to promote our welfare or for our security and our safety, but they're there to contain us, to brutalize us and murder us. The police in our community couldn't possibly be there to protect our property because we own no property. They couldn't possibly be there to see that we receive the due process of law for the simple reason that the police themselves deny us the due process of law.
Last night I had a dream that I spoke with Huey. Told me that he love and respect what I do for the community. Said the power in the people, if people use their power. Building the infrastructure first, get rid of them cowards. Stand firm on your beliefs and support it with truth. Create an army full of soldiers and rally the troops. Education is key, attack with a proper approach. Stay clear-headed, no alcohol, weed or the dope. Learn from my mistakes, control and dominate. Destroy and procreate, we rise to elevate. Politicians tell lies to rise cause they hella fake. Revolutionary suicide besides selling face. Religion and slavery, pastors just be selling faith. Promised in heaven, knowing we in hellish place. Thin line between hero and the villain's place. The card game is rigged, you notice how they deal the ace. Gentrification is rebuilding of their nation. Push us out, force us to hibernation. While they make the things that was ugly beautiful, the ghetto turn pretty, yes, annihilate them. Politics is truth that they hide in the textbooks. They know we won't read it, so put it in the textbooks. Rather give us welfare to fund the warfare. Deny us the healthcare, knowing it's a war here. Ghetto systematically forces to search for salary. Materialistic praises the reasons for casualties. Prison systems built daily. Wise man drove crazy. Arab at the corner store. Call you cousin, then say pay me. You in his own language. And if you don't, he'll pull out that chrome stainless. The suspect name gets said if he black on the news. But if he not black, you know that his name remain nameless. And no, I ain't racist. I know too many races. I got a lot of friends from many different nations. And we just trying to build one brotherhood. But man, it's hard when you knowing that your brother would kill you at the quickness if your brother could get you for anything he found like another jug. And they wanna blame these problems on Obama, knowing damn well they was Bush's problems on my mama.
And we would patrol the community if we saw the police brutalize anyone. We put an end to this. Usually the police would brutalize anyone if we were on hand because we were armed. And if the police arrested the individual, we'd follow him to the jail and bail the individual out. Now whether he was a Panther or not. And we would gain many recruits like this. So therefore the community started to say that, well, these people are really concerned about our welfare.
Huey, a memory, 1942-1989. Huey P. Newton's name, and more importantly, his history of resistance and struggle, is little more than a mystery for many younger people in their 20s. The name and works of a third-rate rapper is more familiar to the average black youth, and that's hardly surprising given the failure of the public school system. For the public school system is invested in ignorance, and Huey P. Newton was a rebel and more, a black revolutionary. Inspired by the civil rights movement and the violent attacks on blacks trying to vote, Huey felt a bolder, more radical stance was needed. At the age of 24, he co-founded the Black Panther Party, and the group expanded by leaps and bounds. Begun in October 1996, in 3 years, it was located in over 40 chapters and branches across the country, with an international section in Algiers, North Africa. Dedicated to the principles of black self-defense and black freedom, the party became the foremost radical group of the era, with a wealth of supporters and enemies. Chief among enemies was the U.S. government, which, in the words of the FBI's chief, J. Edgar Hoover, considered it the greatest threat to national security. For many thousands of black youth, the rebelliousness of the party spoke to their spirits more truly than did the peaceful resistance represented by Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. His Washington speech, known as the I Have a Dream speech, was neither his finest nor his most profound. But like many black preachers who are master orators, he brought his best to it. King, like many busy leaders, had others write some of his speeches. And one of those men was Vincent Harding, now a theologian and historian. Harding contributed to King's groundbreaking Riverside Church speech, delivered precisely a year before his assassination, where he denounced the Vietnam War, marking his break with an American president, Lyndon Baines Johnson, the corporate media, and many of his closest allies in the SCLC, or the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. President Johnson felt betrayed by King, and the media turned from praise to ridicule. In his book, Martin Luther King, The Inconvenient Hero, Harding quotes from the Washington Post, which editorialized that King, quote, had diminished his usefulness to his cause, to his country, and to his people, unquote, because of his speech against the Vietnam War. But betrayals didn't stop him, nor did nasty editorials deter him. Indeed, the violence of war radicalized him deeply, so much so that he said later, the evils of capitalism are as real as the evils of militarism and evils of racism. Think of that. Capitalism, militarism, and racism. Evils. When's the last time you've heard that? Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was being radicalized by the churning events around him. And a year before his death, he was both anti-war and anti-capitalist. Ask yourself, if King were alive today, with his views, could he be elected president? If not, why not? What does that say about the nation's political system? From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio.
You're listening to WhoRadio.com, voice of the International African Revolution.
Living won't let me die in peace. The dead won't let me sleep. My heart filled with a yesterday that never happened. My hands filled with my face. My long breath is bleeding between my fingers. I killed myself once, but my lives are plural. That's why I can speak to the immoral like I'm immortal. My mind fertile, birth a verse with no epidural. The truth hurts. Speak life into the dead as if it's normal. This is the lion-hearted, the fire starter, the sound and the fury, William Faulkner, the color purple, Alice Walker, Canterbury Tales, Geoffrey Chaucer. Every people were sent a prophet, but also every people were sent an imposter. Likewise, every people have been sent an author to tell their story. This is the tale of what turns a man into a monster, and what turns that monster into a martyr. in the shadow of untold trauma, the secret art of how to unfold karma, and the divine unknown drama. True and living, we just trying to make black history, but it's like they trying to make blacks history. They won't even write a eulogy for you and me. Misery loves company, but the company loves misery. The company co-ops your story and sell your minstrel show in HD. Our suffering seen more vividly. Obviously, niggas are NSFW. They don't wanna pay you, they wanna peddle you, or just petty cash to settle you. That's why it's hard to employ me, but even harder to ignore me. The irony isn't lost on me, how they made slaves of the masses of ceremonies. Ha, clever, me, never. They like the speed, niggas neutered. Nigga babies carefully tutored to be foolish, yet ruthless. To eat garbage and drink sewage, until even saying African American sounds like a nigga Judas. The American dream is a love song gone wrong, a fantasy long gone. But if you knew this and still wanna be a slave, then you stupid and useless. I'll tell you straight, you don't got no picking any nigga. This the pick of the litter, alpha male. You smell like Infamil, imbecile. I'm Oscar Grant, still mourning Emmett Till. I'm Emmett Smith, no NFL. Running and juking in the killing fields, but those killing fields deadly enough even to make Emmett still. I admit, still shooken up every time I see Emmett's grill. Till my molars spark and I taste battery acid. And maybe that's too drastic. Maybe I'm overreacting. Maybe seeing dead babies shouldn't faze me. But it does. It does. It does. Are we not flesh and bone? Are we not minds and souls? Our eyes either blind or closed, like we just don't care, as if we don't know. They'll kill you, they'll kill you, they'll kill you like it's no biggie, no ditty. While y'all arguing over who the king of New York City, they emasculate the greats by Black Panther, Hello Kitty, or slowly assassinate the greats, goodbye Whitney. You can see the future if you learn history. I'm speaking to you straight and right. They got you leaning left like 450. Whether wealth, we the women have you chasing dimes, wasting time. Oh, that's a triple double entendre and alliteration at the same damn time. Okay, so the Sufi can rhyme, but can we not have another convo about your top 5 that are alive? Can we instead talk about the top 1% and the bottom 99, or the wise 5% and the deaf, dumb, and blind 85, and how the circle 7 and the 120 saved our lives? On the boat with Jesus' name, Lucifer came, and then proof of our name went poof. David Blaine disappeared between the noose and the chains. Euthanasia introducing the youth to the cane. So we singing and rapping, attempts at reducing the pain. We don't know what else to do with the pain. We don't know what else to do with the pain. They say rap for us, and then they clap for us. Are you not entertained? Standing on my brother's body, are you not entertained? Carrying my son's carcass, are you not entertained? But even in all the battery and the abuse, we are still so beautiful. All babies like balls of light, bright enough to brighten the darkness of the battlefield. But looking into my daughter's face reminds me that there's a battle still, and that the battle's real, and that a draw is a win for losers. We must win. The truth is that the sky is mine, and by mine I mean I and I, and by I and I mean you and I. The sky is ours, the heavens fallen, we either fly or die. We must win. You have killed us so many times. We have died so many deaths. We have died for everyone. We have died for everything. We have died for nothing. We are done with death. We are done with death. We will not die another day. We are the true and living, and we must win.
Is your heart pure? If so, then come to heal me. heart pure. So they come to the hills of me. Yeah. Yeah. And I go wash your hands so you can come to the hills.
A nine-stripper mad dash. A friend request following a hashtag. Now everybody want it like the last laugh. A Michael Jackson jacket or a death mask. Purple Jordans or the mixed girl in your math class. Stable is when the bath had Baghdad. But corporate jets really had to have that gas band. War and they hope they all fall from the rat attack. Cause that's just more dinosaur for the Cadillacs.
Live from the other side, what you see? A bunch of nonsense on my TV. Heaven on earth is what I need. When I feel I'm in hell every time I what you hear, a bunch of nonsense all in my ear. Rich man, poor man, we all gotta pay. It's freedom ain't free, especially round my way.
Wait. Marvel at the state of heart of man. Then turn around and treat Ghana like a garbage can. America's a big motherfucking garbage man. If you ain't know, you part and parcel of the problem. You say no, you ain't, and I say yes, you is. Soon as you find out what planned obsolescence is, you say no, they didn't, and I say yes, they did. The definition of unnecessary nears. Manifested, say that we should protest just to get arrested. That goes against all my hustling ethics. A bunch of jail rippers say it's highly ineffective. Depart from Martin, connect on Malcolm X tip. Insert Baldwin, the similar to separate. To me, the truth is more fulfilling than a method of finding really fast internet to have some sex with. It's all one song short of a set list. Couple croissants shy of a continental breakfast. Or blowing out your birthday candles just to make a death wish. So absurd, word to Chief Bone Necklace. Down at the Lakota Sioux Casino, a whole culture boiled down to giving you patino. I go as left as a heart in the chest, cause the Horn of Africa is now starving to death.
Live from the other side, what you see? A bunch of nonsense on my TV. Heaven on earth is what I need. But I feel I'm in hell every time I break. One live from the other side, what you hear? A bunch of nonsense all in my ear. Rich man, poor man, we all gotta pay. Freedom ain't free,
smash
around my way.
In all white Los Angeles, the dream of Mr. Chandler. Hope and pray they take Columbus Day up off the calendar. South Central, an example of God's gift. So shout to all the mothers raising babies in Spa 6. The projects of Oakland City, Detroit, ghost towns. Monopolies on poverty where D-Boy Coke bound. It's parts of Manila like the video for Thriller. But the U.S. Embassy is reminiscent of a villa. If poverty is chocolate and privilege vanilla, then what's the flavor of the Sunday preacher's pedophilia? Cash rules everything around these. There's classrooms everywhere around me. Hither you can be
Mr. Burns and Mr. Smithers, the tyrant or the slave, but nowhere in the middle of the extremes of America's dream. Freud fighting Neo, Freddy Cougar refereeing, man.
Live on the other side, what you see? A bunch of nonsense on my TV. Heaven on earth is what I need, but I feel I'm in hell every time I breathe. Live on the other side, what you hear? A bunch of nonsense all in my ear. Rich man, poor man, we all gotta pay. It's freedom ain't free, especially around my way.
Has been their friend.
maybe he cheated for a few cents every now and then. And what about the tenements? They're burning down in the slums. Some dog they call a slumlord is losing his income. What a scare they received when the brother said, no, let's not burn the ghettos down. We'll break up in groups and firebomb and loot on the opposite side of town. So then they called in their army, machine guns and tanks, and ordered them to attack. The people arose together as one and used what they had to fight back. And now that it's happened, the question arises, why are the few in fuss? If they look over their past and examine their deed, they'll know what's the matter with us. When will the promises be fulfilled that they've made to us over the years? Where's the pay we have not received for our blood and sweat and tears? Where's the employment that we need? The decent salary? The welfare payments will not do to feed a family. They say conditions are this way because we don't have skills. But instead they offer us extermination pills. So we sound a warning, they better change their tune. They don't have long to make things right, they better do something soon. Their law enforcement will not work. Whatever they conspire will only serve to make us strong. We will fight fire with fire. No, that was not a riot that they saw down in the slums. That was a dress rehearsal for things that's yet to come.
Alabama's got me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. Everybody knows about Mississippi, goddamn. Alabama's got me so upset. Lurleen Wallace has made me lose my rest. Everybody knows about Mississippi, goddamn. Can't you see it? I know you can feel it. It's all in the air. I can't stand the pressure much longer. Somebody say a prayer. Alabama has got me so upset, and Memphis has made me lose my rest. Everybody knows about Mississippi, goddamn. Hound dogs on my trail, little school children sitting in jail. Black cat crossed my path, I think every day's gonna be my last. Lord have mercy on this land of mine. We all gonna get it in due time. Cause I don't belong here, I don't belong there. I've even stopped believing in prayer. Tell me, I'll tell you, me and my people just about do. I've been there, so I know. You keep on saying go slow. Well, that's just the trouble.
Too slow.
Washing the windows.
Too slow.
Picking the cotton.
Too slow.
Nothing but rotten.
Too slow.
Too damn lazy.
Too slow.
Thinking's crazy.
Too slow.
Where am I going? What am I doing? I don't know. I don't know. Just try to do my very best. Stand up, be counted with all the rest. Cause everybody knows about Mississippi, goddamn. Now you heard him. He's one of you. If you have been moved at all, and you know my songs at all, for God's sakes, join me. Don't sit back there. The time is too late now. Good God.
You know, the king is dead. The king of love is dead. I ain't about to be nonviolent, honey. Oh, no. Picket lines, school boycotts. They try to say it's a communist plot. But all I want is equality for my sister, my brother, my people, and me. And I loved him because he believed it. He lived by it. But you lied to me all these years. You told me to wash and clean my ears and talk real fine just like a lady, and you stopped calling my mama Aunt Sadie. Hear me now. But my country is full of lies. We all gonna die and die like flies. I don't trust nobody anymore. Keep on saying go slow. That's just the trouble.
No.
Desegregation.
No.
Mass participation.
No.
Unification.
No.
Do things gradually.
No.
Why don't you see it? Why don't you feel it? I don't know. I don't know. You don't have to live next to me. Just give me my equality. 'Cause everybody knows about Mississippi. Everybody knows about Alabama. Everybody knows about
someday. I know he's coming. thing to be like dying, Porgy. When he calls me, but when he comes, I know I'll have to go. Let him handle me and drive me mad. If you can keep me, I wanna stay here with you forever. I've got my
listening to Africa Live on the Uhuru Radio Network. The last two songs you heard, Mississippi Goddamn and I Love You Porgy, are two classics by Nina Simone. Nina's birthday is February 21st, which is an important day in the African liberation struggle. An important day because it's also the day that Malcolm X was assassinated in 1965, and because it's the day of the African martyr, as designated by the African People's Socialist Party. Nina was an artist that used her gifts to advance our struggle. Born in 1933 in Tryon, North Carolina, she would have been 81 years old this year. Now, another song by Nina, Four Women, performed by Michelle Indigue Ocello. Join us here next week on Africa Live. Uhuru.
My arms are long. My hair is woolly. My back is strong, strong enough to take the pain inflicted again and again. What do they call me? My name is Aunt Sarah. What do they call me? My name is white. He fussed.
You're the first mother I see. My life's been rough. I'm enslaved. What do they call me?
Here comes the judge. Let everybody rise. In walks the beast, dressed up in disguise. Up walks the pig with his little badge of tin. Out goes the cry, bring the prisoners in. Stand at the bar, and ones and twos and threes. All right, DA, read out the charges, please. Hush up, defense, I hear not what you say. Guilty are all assembled here today. 50 are here, but just one face is pale. Crazy mixed up kid, what are you doing in jail? You robbed the bank, why that's no serious crime. My Uncle Jesse James did that all the time. Now what did these blacks and Puerto Ricans do? He stole some bread and he a pair of shoes. He would not budge when the policeman said to move. They all must get time, there's nothing else to do. He had some dope and this one had a gun. This one was drunk, out looking for some fun. These few are mad, they speak of liberty. They are a threat to our society. They are organized into a terrorist band. Cut off their heads, their body cannot stand. Lock this one up and execute this pair. Gag this one's mouth and put him in the chair. Take them away, the pen must be their fate. We must provide free labor for the state. We need some more policemen on the beat to keep these hoods and criminals off the street. This is the brand of justice in the court. A special brand for poor folks to exploit. A brand replete with treacheries and flaws. A mockery of justice and laws. Made to protect their mountains of gold and all the other wealth that they have stole. No sense of shame for the way they behave. Just a driving desire to exploit and enslave. But a new day is coming for the oppressed. A desire to have all of their grievance redressed. They'll sing a new song in a whole different tone. Everything would improve if they'd leave us alone. There's no limit to the things we could do. We'd run our own courts, our own government too. A well-organized state is what it could be. One nation of blacks, independent and free. One nation of blacks, independent and free. One nation of blacks, independent and free.
From a stock that pitch cocktail bombs and hand grenades. We pour cayenne pepper around the perimeter of a building to keep the police dogs at bay. I'm the Panther Party in the Desire Housing Projects in New Orleans. I'm a nigga turning the gun on the National Guards. Take a long, long look. I'm a cook in the kitchen asking the missus to taste the dinner. Take a long, long sip, cause death ain't always this good. It's eyes popping out they sockets. It's a lifeless body rocking backwards and forwards. It's a boy stabbed 47 times in front of the church house. It's a man 43 years old stuffing his penis in a 9-year-old girl's mouth. No, death don't always taste good. Just don't sound like something I want to eat often. I hear them say it was like a train came through the room, left mama so depressed she was unable to move until one day, a few months after the hurricane. Husband and child found the Trinity bloody in bed, his wife, son, other daughter dead, and on the end table there was a letter that read, I couldn't stay here, not for 1 minute longer, and it made no sense for me to leave here alone, cause who would take care of my babies with their mama gone? I'm telling you, death ain't always good. It'll leave you finning for water and food. It'll riddle up your body in an Audubon ballroom. They'll El Hajj Malik El Shabazz you, crown you king. king then dethrone you in a Lorraine hotel. They'll disfigure your body to where folk can't tell if you Emmett Till or not. Tell them, mama, keep that casket open. Let all the world see it ain't just burning in Mississippi. Hell is hot wherever you be. From the rooftop to the cell block, step on up to the auction block, bend over, touch your toes, so show your teeth, live her. Examine his balls, it damn near sound like a hip-hop song, but it's slavery at its peak. A circus for all the freaks, they'll warn you, caution when you speak. Can't afford the truth to leak, but we'll say blessed are the meek, and all the ones who make peace, and all the ones who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness. For we say theirs is the kingdom, earth is their inheritance. So no matter how treacherous, they'll try to trap us in them trenches, they'll dig deeper ditches, but all that matters is this: which side will we pick? Which path will we choose? Either win or lose, cause death don't come in vain. Not for us to remain enslaved or our spirits to remain in cages. It comes so we might be courageous to fulfill our obligation to our God and all creation and stand in determination, able to look death in the face and say, we made it. We made it. We made it. We made it.
You're listening to WhoRadio.com, voice of the International African Revolution.
Hey, Aisha, hold on. I'll walk with you. You know, this is going to be a great class.
I know. Yet I'm still trying to figure out how I can exactly use these skills.
The Uhuru Movement.
The Uhuru Movement?
Yes, the Uhuru Movement. They offer great opportunities to utilize these type of skills in the most meaningful ways. I mean, writers, photography, graphic design, journalism, videography, video editing, even radio broadcasting.
Wow, sounds great. I'm assuming you have to be pretty advanced.
Not at all. I mean, although experienced is welcome, it's not mandatory. You know, the Uhuru Movement, they will train you. Log on and sign up today at uhurunews.com, where your skills are wanted and needed. Whether reporting on local news, writing for an international newspaper, or hosting your own radio show, the Uhuru Movement is the place for you. Do you have a desire to work in sales, marketing, or administration? Do you have the talent for audio engineering? Log on and sign up today, uhurunews.com. Not just explaining the world, but changing the world.
Thank you, brother. I will definitely follow up today.
And hopefully you'll become a member like I am.